Episode 64, Goodbye Holland, Hello New World.
Welcome to the Principles in Practice podcast. This is where we discuss biblical principles for life and learning. I'm your host, Heather Hall, and this is my co-host,
Brian Hall.
Hi, everyone. Welcome back to our podcast. We are doing the historic Thanksgiving Day series. And if you missed episodes 61 and 62, take some time to go back, listen to those, and come back for this episode. I'm going to go ahead and read to you directly out of Bradford's account because then you have his word for it, someone who lived during this time, someone who experienced everything and knew the people that he's writing about. He knew them very personally. So we're going to be covering their reasons and causes for removing themselves from Holland, and then a little bit about the preparations for their voyage to the New World. After they had lived in this city about some 11 or 12 years, which is the more observable being the whole time of that famous truce between that state and the Spaniards, and sundry of them were taken away by death, and many others began to be well stricken in years, the grave mistress of experience having taught them many things, those prudent governors with sundry of the sagest members began both deeply to apprehend their present dangers and wisely to foresee the future and think of timely remedy. In the agitation of their thoughts and much discourse of things hereabout, at length they began to incline to this conclusion of removal to some other place. Not out of any newfangledness or other such like giddy humor by which men are oftentimes transported to their great hurt and danger, but for sundry weighty and solid reasons, some of the chief of which I will here briefly touch. And first, they saw and found by experience the hardness of the place and the country to be such as few in comparison would come to them, and fewer that would bide it out and continue with them. For many that came to them, and many more that desired to be with them, could not endure that great labor and hard fare, with other inconveniences which they underwent and were contented with. But though they loved their persons, approved their cause, and honored their sufferings, yet they left them, as it were, weeping, as Orpah did her mother-in-law Naomi, or as those Romans did Cato in Utica, who desired to be excused and borne with, though they could not all be Catos. For many, though, they desired to enjoy the ordinances of God in their purity and the liberty of the gospel with them, yet, alas, they admitted of bondage with danger of conscience, rather than to endure these hardships. Yea, some preferred and chose the prisons in England, rather than this liberty in Holland with these afflictions. But it was thought that if a better and easier place of living could be had, it would draw many and take away these discouragements. Yea, their pastor would often say that many of those who both wrote and preached now against them, if they were in a place where they might have liberty and live comfortably, they would then practice as they did. Secondly, they saw that though the people generally bore all these difficulties very cheerfully and with a resolute courage, being in the best and strength of their years, yet old age began to steal on many of them. And their great and continual labors, with other crosses and sorrows, hastened it before the time. So as it was not only probably thought, but apparently seen, that within a few years more they would be in danger to scatter, by necessities pressing them, or sink under their burdens, or both. And therefore, according to the divine proverb, that a wise man seeth the plague when it cometh, and hideth himself, so they, like skillful and beaten soldiers, were fearful either to be entrapped or surrounded by their enemies, so as they should neither be able to fight nor fly, and therefore thought it better to dislodge betimes, so some place of better advantage and less danger, if any such could be found. Thirdly, as necessity was a taskmaster over them, so they were forced to be such, not only to their servants, but in a sort to their dearest children, the which as it did not a little wound the tender hearts of many a loving father and mother, so it produced likewise sundry sad and sorrowful effects. For many of their children that were of best dispositions and gracious inclinations, having learned to bear the yoke in their youth and willing to bear part of their parents' burden, were oftentimes so oppressed with their heavy labors that though their minds were free and willing, yet their bodies bowed under the weight of the same and became decrepit in their early youth, the vigor of nature being consumed in the very bud, as it were. But that which was more lamentable, and of all sorrows most heavy to be borne, was that many of their children by these occasions, and the great licentiousness of youth in that country, and the manifold temptations of the place, were drawn away by evil examples into extravagant and dangerous courses, getting the reins off their necks and departing from their parents. Some became soldiers, others took upon them far voyages by sea, and others some worse courses tending to dissoluteness and the danger of their souls, to the great grief of their parents and dishonor of God, so that they saw their posterity would be in danger to degenerate and be corrupted. Lastly, and which was not least, a great hope and inward zeal they had of laying some good foundation, or at least to make some way thereunto, for the propagating and advancing the gospel of the kingdom of Christ in those remote parts of the world. Yea, though they should be but even as stepping stones unto others for the performing of so great a work. These and some other like reasons moved them to undertake this resolution of their removal, the which they afterward prosecuted with so great difficulties as by this sequel will appear. The place they had thoughts on was some of those vast and unpeopled countries of America, which are fruitful and fit for habitation, being devoid of all civil inhabitants, where they are only savage and brutish men, which range up and down, little otherwise than wild beasts of the same. This proposition being made public and coming to the scanning of all, it raised many variable opinions amongst men and caused many fears and doubts amongst themselves. Some, from the reasons and hopes conceived, labored to stir up and encourage the rest to undertake and prosecute the same. Others again, out of their fears, objected against it and sought to divert from it, alleging many things, and those neither unreasonable nor improbable, as that it was a great design and subject to many unconceivable perils and dangers, as besides the casualties of the sea, which none can be freed from, the length of the voyage was such as the weak bodies of women and other persons worn out with age and travail, as many of them were, could never be able to endure. And yet, if they should, the miseries of the land which they should be exposed unto would be too hard to be borne and likely, some or all of them together, to consume and utterly to ruinate them. For there they should be liable to famine and nakedness and the want, in a manner, of all things. The change of air, diet, and drinking of water would infect their bodies with sore sicknesses and grievous diseases. And also those which should escape or overcome these difficulties should yet be in continual danger of the savage people, who are cruel, barbarous, and most treacherous, being most furious in their rage and merciless where they overcome. I'm going to pause here just a moment from Bradford's account to say that he describes some pretty horrendous things that they were concerned about. So if you want to, I'd encourage you to go look up the Of Plymouth Plantation book online if you don't have a copy of it, and read it for yourself. But because we're trying to keep this rather family friendly, I'm not going to read those accounts. Now I'll continue reading. And surely it cannot be thought, but the very hearing of these things cannot but move the very bowels of men to grate within them, and make the weak to quake and tremble. It was further objected that it would require great sums of money to furnish such a voyage, and to fit them with necessaries, than their consumed estates would amount to, and yet they must as well look to be second with supplies as presently to be transported. Also, many precedents of ill success and lamentable miseries befallen others in the like designs were easy to be found, and not forgotten to be alleged, besides their own experience in their former troubles and hardships in their removal into Holland, and how hard a thing it was for them to live in that strange place, though it was a neighbor country and a civil and rich commonwealth. It was answered that all great and honorable actions are accompanied with great difficulties, and must be both enterprised and overcome with answerable courages. It was granted the dangers were great, but not desperate. The difficulties were many, but not invincible. For though there were many of them likely, yet they were not certain. It might be sundry of the things feared might never befall. Others, by provident care and the use of good means, might be in a great measure be prevented. And all of them, through the help of God, by fortitude and patience, might either be borne or overcome. True, it was that such attempts were not to be made and undertaken without good ground and reason, not rashly or lightly as many have done for curiosity or hope of gain, etc. But their condition was not ordinary. Their ends were good and honorable. they're calling lawful and urgent, and therefore they might expect the blessing of God in their proceeding. Yea, though they should lose their lives in this action, yet might they have comfort in the same, and their endeavors would be honorable. They lived here but as men in exile and in a poor condition, and as great miseries might possibly befall them in this place. For the 12 years of truce were now out, and there was nothing but beating of drums and preparing for war, the events whereof are always uncertain. The Spaniard might prove as cruel as the savages of America, and the famine and pestilence as sore here as there, and their liberty less to look out for remedy. After many other particular things answered and alleged on both sides, it was fully concluded by the major part to put this design in execution, and to prosecute it by the best means they could. And first, after their humble prayers unto God for his direction and assistance, and a general conference held hereabout, they consulted what particular place to pitch upon and prepare for. Some, and none of the meanest, had thoughts and were earnest for Guiana, or some of those fertile places in those hot climates. Others were some parts of Virginia, where the English had already made entrance and beginning. Those for Guiana alleged the country was rich, fruitful, and blessed with a perpetual spring and a flourishing greenness, where vigorous nature brought forth all things in abundance and plenty without any great labor or art of man. So, as it must needs make the inhabitants rich, seeing less provisions of clothing and other things would serve, then a more colder and less fruitful countries must be had. As also that the Spaniards, having much more than they could possess, had not yet planted there, nor anywhere very near the same. But to this it was answered, that out of question the country was both fruitful and pleasant, and might yield riches and maintenance to the possessors more easily than the other. Yet, other things considered, it would not be so fit for them. And first, that such hot countries are subject to grievous diseases, and many noisome impediments, which other more temperate places are freer from, and would not so well agree with our English bodies. Again, if they should live there, and do well, the jealous Spaniard would never suffer them long, but would displant or overthrow them as he did the French in Florida, who were seated further from his richest countries, and the sooner, because they should have none to protect them, and their own strength would be too small to resist so potent an enemy and so near a neighbor. On the other hand, for Virginia it was objected that if they lived among the English which were there planted, or so near them as to be under their government, they should be in as great danger to be troubled and persecuted for the cause of religion as if they lived in England, and it might be worse. And if they lived too far off, they should neither have succor nor defense from them. But at length the conclusion was to live as a distinct body by themselves under the general government of Virginia, and by their friends to sue to His Majesty that he would be pleased to grant them freedom of religion. And that this might be obtained, they were put in good hope by some great persons of good rank and quality that were made their friends, whereupon two were chosen and sent into England, at the charge of the rest, to solicit this matter, who found the Virginia Company very desirous to have them go thither and willing to grant them a patent, with as ample privileges as they had or could grant to any, and to give them the best furtherance they could. And some of the chief of that company doubted not to obtain their suit of the king for liberty and religion, and to have it confirmed under the king's broad seal according to their desires. But it proved a harder piece of work than they took it for though many means were used to bring it about, yet it could not be effected. For there were divers of good and worth labored with the king to obtain it, amongst whom was one of his chief secretaries, Sir Robert Naunton. And some others wrought with the archbishop to give way thereunto, but it proved all in vain. Yet thus far they prevailed, in sounding His Majesty's mind, that he would convene at them and not molest them, provided they carried themselves peaceably, but to allow or tolerate them by his public authority under his seal, they found it would not be. And this was all the chief of the Virginia Company or any other of their best friends could do in this case. Yet they persuaded them to go on, for they presumed they should not be troubled. And with this answer the messengers returned and signified what diligence had been used and to what issue things were come. But this made a damp in the business and caused some distraction, for many were afraid that if they should unsettle themselves and put off their estates and go upon these hopes, it might prove dangerous and prove but a sandy foundation. Yea, it was thought they might better have presumed hereupon without making any suit at all than, having made it, to be thus rejected. But some of the chiefest thought otherwise, and that they might well proceed hereupon, and that the king's majesty was willing enough to suffer them without molestation, though for other reasons he would not confirm it by any public act. And furthermore, if there was no security in this promise intimated, there would be no great certainty in a further confirmation of the same. For if afterwards there should be a purpose or desire to wrong them, though they had a seal as broad as the house floor, it would not serve the turn. For there would be means enow found to recall or reverse it. Seeing therefore the course was probable, they must rest herein on God's providence, as they had done in other things. Upon this resolution, other messengers were dispatched to end with the Virginia Company as well as they could, and to procure a patent with as good and ample conditions as they might by any good means obtain, as also to treat and conclude with such merchants and other friends as had manifested their forwardness to provoke to an adventure in this voyage, for which end they had instructions given them upon what conditions they should proceed with them, or else to conclude nothing without further advice. And here it will be requisite to insert a letter or two that may give light to these proceedings. A copy of letter from Sir Edwin Sandys directed to Mr. John Robinson and Mr. William Brewster. After my hearty salutations, the agents of your congregation, Robert Cushman and John Carver, have been in communication with divers select gentlemen of His Majesty's Council for Virginia, and by the writing of 7 articles subscribed with your names, have given them that good degree of satisfaction, which hath carried them on with a resolution to set forward your desire in the best sort that may be, for your own and the public good. Divers particulars whereof we leave to their faithful report, having carried themselves here with that good discretion, as is both to their own and their credit from whence they came. And whereas, being to treat for a multitude of people, they have requested further time to confer with them that are to be interested in this action, about the several particulars which is the prosecution thereof will fall out considerable, it hath been very willingly assented to, and so they do not return unto you. If therefore it may please God so to direct your desires, as that on your parts there fall out no just impediments, I trust by the same direction it shall likewise appear that on your part all forwardness to set you forward shall be found in the best sort, which with reason may be expected. And so I betake you with this design, which I hope verily is the work of God, to the gracious protection and blessing of the highest. London, November 12, Anno 1617. Your very loving friend, Edwin Sandys. Their answer was as followeth: Right worshipful, our humble duties remembered in our own, our messengers, and our church's name, with all thankful acknowledgement of your singular love, expressing itself as otherwise, so more specially in your great care and earnest endeavor of our good in this weighty business about Virginia, which the less able we are to requite, we shall think ourselves the more bound to commend in our prayers unto God for recompense, whom, as for the present you rightly behold in our endeavors, so shall we not be wanting on our parts, the same God assisting us, to return all answerable fruit and respect unto the labor of your love bestowed upon us. We have, with the best speed and consideration withal that we could, set down our requests in writing, subscribed as you willed, with the hands of the greatest part of our congregation, and have sent the same unto the council by our agent and a deacon of our church, John Carver, unto whom we have also requested a gentleman of our company to adjoin himself, to the care and discretion of which too we do refer the prosecuting of business. Now we persuade ourselves, right worshipful, that we need not provoke your godly and loving mind to any further or more tender care of us, since you have pleased so far to interest us in yourself that, under God, above all persons and things in the world, we rely upon you, expecting the care of your love, counsel of your wisdom, and the help of and countenance of your authority, notwithstanding for your encouragement in the work, so far as probabilities may lead, we will not forbear to mention these instances of inducement. 1. We verily believe and trust the Lord is with us, unto whom and whose service we have given ourselves in many trials, and that he will graciously prosper our endeavors according to the simplicity of our hearts therein. 2. We are well weaned from the delicate milk of our mother country, and inured to the difficulties of a strange and hard land, which yet in a great part we have by patience overcome. 3. The people are, for the body of them, industrious and frugal. We think we may safely say, as any company of people in the world. 4. We are knit together as a body in a most strict and sacred bond and covenant of the Lord, of the violation whereof we make great conscience, and by virtue whereof we do hold ourselves straitly tied to all care of each other's good and of the whole, by every one and so mutually. 5. Lastly, it is not with us as with other men, whom small things can discourage, or small discontentments cause, to wish themselves at home again. We know our entertainment in England and in Holland. We shall much prejudice both our arts and means by removal, who, if we should be driven to return, we should not hope to recover our present helps and comforts, neither indeed look ever for ourselves to attain unto the like in any other place during our lives, which are now drawing towards their periods. These motives we have been bold to tender unto you, which you in your wisdom may also impart to any other our worshipful friends of the council with you, of all whose godly disposition and loving towards our despised persons we are most glad, and shall not fail by all good means to continue and increase the same. We will not be further troublesome, but do with a renewed remembrance of our humble duties to your worship, and, so far as in modesty we may be bold, to any other of our well-willers of the council with you, we take our leaves, committing your persons and counsels to the guidance and direction of the Almighty. Yours much bounden in all duty, John Robinson, William Brewster, Leiden, December 15, anno 1617. Bradford continues, for further light in these proceedings, see some other letters and notes as follows. But at last, after all these things and their long attendance, they had a patent granted them and confirmed under the company's seal. But these divisions and distractions had shaken off many of their pretended friends and disappointed them of much of their hoped for and proffered means. By the advice of some friends, this patent was not taken in the name of any of their own, but in the name of Mr. John Wincop, a religious gentleman then belonging to the Countess of Lincoln, who intended to go with them. But God so disposed that he never went, nor they ever made use of this patent, which had cost them so much labor and charge, as by the sequel will appear, this patent being sent over for them to view and consider, as also the passages about the propositions between them and such merchants and friends as should either go or adventure with them, and especially with those on whom they did chiefly depend for shipping and means, whose proffers had been large, they were requested to fit and prepare themselves with all speed, a right emblem, it may be, of uncertain things of this world, that when men have toiled themselves for them, they vanish into smoke. Thanks for joining me for this episode, everyone. In our next episode, we're going to be covering about the voyage and a little bit about their arrival in the New World.
As always, if you're looking for additional resources or support, you can visit our website at principalacademy.com, check out our shop and our blog, and you can also find us on Facebook at Christian Homeschooling with Bible Principles, also on Instagram under Principal Academy. Thanks so much for joining us.
All right. Well, this is Heather Hall.
And this is Brian Hall.
For Christ and His glory.